All right, I'm going to talk about the conspiracy theories of the globalist elite. And that's a general title. That being sort of the general title, and it's kind of a nonsense title, I get emails fairly frequently from people who will say to me, "Paul, you got to talk more about this global elite." And when I say global elite, that's my term. It's usually comes out in several different formulations, whether it's, the New World Order, the Bilderbergers, the Rothschilds, the Council on Foreign Relations, the British Royal Family. And I generally have a single response to all that, which I'll get to. But I'm going to talk about it a bit and what I know about these things and why I don't talk about them. When I was a teenager, I was born in 1973. So I was a teenager in the late 80s and the early 90s. When I was a kid, early teenager, maybe 15, 16, I got this book called Dark Secrets of the New Age. As I often mention, I've been a Christian my whole life. And my dad was kind of we weren't really denominational. He was a kind of a charismatic Catholic, but he was very anti-Catholic. We didn't really have a denomination, but there was a lot of pop Christianity that I had access to. My dad used to watch Jack Van Impe. I'd watch Jack Van Impe. He had books on the New World Order. I read the books on the New World Order. We used to have a subscription to a newspaper called The Spotlight. A lot of people won't know what that is. They probably have a internet page now. It's kind of an anti-Semitic, New World Order kind of watchdog newspaper. Now, this is the 80s. There's no internet. So, I've been privy to a lot of these conspiracy theories. We have to call them theories. And there's nothing wrong with the word theory. When we say, like, the theory of gravitation, it just means all the formulas that go into gravitation. It doesn't mean something is real, though something can be theoretical, but unproven, meaning we could say, well, this is theoretically possible according to the model we have in this theory. So this should be possible. Whether or not that can actually be made real is another story. So theoretical does not make any sort of commentary on the reality or unreality of anything. So if we talk about conspiracy theories, usually people use that in a pejorative sense. They're trying to make fun of the idea, oh, those conspiracy theories. Or when people talk about evolution, they want to say, evolution is just a theory, but that doesn't really say anything. It's much better to get specific about things, about what you don't like about them. Saying it's just a theory is not an argument at all. So I was privy to these conspiracy theories back before the internet, and I had access to a lot of information at the time. And I'll tell you that those events were coming to a head even back there in the 80s. The conspiracy was just about ready to take over. It was right on top of us. They were ready to dominate. There was just one more step, and then the whole world was going to be under their power. Or it kind of already was. And maybe it already is. Luke chapter 4, verse 5. And the devil, taking him up into an high mountain, showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, all this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine. The world is already under the devil's power. It has been all the years that man has walked upon it. Of course, it is in the devil's power under God. It's ultimately in God's power. But God has given it to the devil, and the devil, in turn, has given it to men. None of this is out of the realm of God's sovereignty. Listen to my study on predestination, and you'll understand kind of the deep truths of that. But, you know, that was something I did not understand at the time. I remember I looked at the book by Tex Mars, and I know he's still busy, and he's doing things, and I'm not privy to his reputation. The Dark Secrets of the New Age, what the New Age is trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish, the dark undercurrent under what they were trying to push culturally, and not just culturally, spiritually. And, you know, I read these books and I took them quite seriously. In fact, my original concept for my Revelation album was going to be based on a lot of the things I had read about in Tex Mars' book. Like, I remember looking at a piece of paper I came across in my belongings. It was from when I was a teenager, and on it I had written a list of song titles for my Revelation series. And one of the titles was Enter Lord Maitreya. For some people, that may not make a lot of sense, but Maitreya is kind of the New Age savior who's going to come and enlighten the whole world. And of course, in Mars' book, he was saying, oh, this is the Antichrist. No doubt. Such a person probably would be an Antichrist. I don't know if he would be the Antichrist. For him to be the Antichrist, he would have to have the accompanying signs. But there's a problem with that kind of thinking. What he's doing in his book, and, you know, this is general, and I'll get back to what I was saying, but in general, people might look at my website and say, well, Paul, you have this page on Arnold Murray, and wow, what a lot of awesome research. You know all about him. And then they'll say, well, what about this, and what about that? And what people don't understand is I'm not an expert on everything. I was legitimately a student of Arnold Murray. I didn't go and, like, pick on him as a side topic. Like, I'm going to be just study this guy, even though all I'm doing is looking to discredit him. The reason why, when you look at, like, the Christian Research Institute and some of the other groups that have done analyses of Murray's teaching, you'll notice it's kind of thin, because they aren't legitimately his students. They just kind of gnaw around the edges and learn enough about him to be able to write something about him, because it doesn't take you long to figure out that his teachings are false if you're skillful in the word. Most of the time, Arnold Murray takes advantage of people because they're not skillful in the word, and they would like to be. That's how I got sucked into his teaching, because I didn't know a lot about the Bible, but I really wanted to know a lot about the Bible. And here was a guy who seemed to know a lot about the Bible, and he did, in his way, know a lot about the Bible, even if some of that teaching was incorrect. So I don't have an expertise on Tex Mars. I don't really have an expertise in the New World Order, and I'm going to get to why that is. Even though I read a lot about it way back when, and it used to be important to me. The Maitreya figure, what's wrong with that? Well, the problem with that is they're basically saying, well, someday there's going to be Antichrist. What's Antichrist going to be like? Well, let's go ask the New Agers what they're looking for. And then they go and examine the New Agers. Oh, they're looking for this dude Maitreya, and it's going to be like this, and it's going to be like that. And they say, that's what's coming. So we're going to basically the equivalent of false prophets and deriving from what they think the future is going to bring. a theory of what the biblical prophecies should be interpreted as. You know what I'm saying? The same thing with the whole banking conspiracies, the money conspiracies, right? The mark of the beast. Now, when you read the book of Revelation in chapter 13, you will notice it says all the world's going to wonder after the beast, and that no man could buy or sell except he that had the mark of the beast or the number of his name. It doesn't say anything about a one world currency, but that is what people always read into it. Why do they read that into the book of Revelation? Well, because they read things on what the elite banking people want to do. They find these position papers and these, you know, ivory tower kind of, they have these little seminars where they get together and they talk about how can we bring about a one world currency. And they're like, oh, it's prophecy being fulfilled, because they're trying to bring about one world currency. And they're looking to the banking elite and what they say they're going to do or they would like to do. And they're saying that is how we should interpret Revelation 13. I remember this back in the 80s when I used to watch Jack Van Impe and, you know, John Ankerberg's show. They'd have these different people on talking about the mark of the beast. And they were talking about how someday they're going to have these microchips they can put under your skin. And that's going to be the beginning of a cashless society in which, you know, you pass your hand under the scanner. And, you know, so to speak, instead of a debit card or something, you're going to use this, you know, this chip in your skin, you're going to pass it under there. Well, so they're looking at this position paper or this theoretical kind of idea of like, oh, this is something we could do. We could, because the bankers are trying to figure out how to stop fraud, and the prophets are trying to figure out what the future is going to be. So they look to the bankers, and the bankers say, well, maybe we could put a chip under people's hands. And they go, oh, so that's how it's going to be. That's how the mark of the beast is going to come about. They're going to put a microchip in your hand. Of course, that's how no man could buy or sell save he that had the mark. Because they're saying, well, how could that be? That's where it starts. How could it be that you couldn't buy or sell without a mark? How is that technologically possible? This was technologically impossible before the modern age, they will say. Is it? Like having a mark, like if I just put tattoo 666 on my hand. Now that's rather obvious. It might be more subtle than that. But I remember Arnold Murray used to say, they could tattoo 666 all over your body, but that wouldn't change what's in your mind. Well, yeah, you could deny Christ with your lips, but that wouldn't change what you really thought in your mind. Sometimes the outward does matter. You know, what we do, because out of the heart proceed evil thoughts. Out of the heart proceeds evil deeds. The inside of the heart is what's doing what's outside. So anyways, let's just say I had 666 tattooed on my hand, on my right hand. And let's say I have a tattoo there and I go to the store and I say, okay, let's see your mark. And I show it to them because you can't buy or sell without it. Does it require anything more than a mark? No, a mark is all that is required. You don't have to have any special technology. You don't have to have a one world currency. You don't need any of that stuff. So therefore, that stuff is also not any sort of sign that the end is near. Nor is it necessarily bad, meaning a single currency may be a bad thing for many reasons. One, it would be very difficult to bring about. It could potentially be very unstable. What's it going to be based on? There are all kinds of questions. There's a reason we don't have one currency. It's because it is problematic. It might be something people would like to do in the long term, but in the short term, it's completely impractical. You know, I would add the caveat, oh, it would take some sort of great big disaster to make it happen. They say, aha, that's what they're going to do. They're going to make a big disaster, and that's going to bring about the change. Even so, let's say we have a big disaster. It wipes out a lot of people, and they institute a single currency for the entire world. That is, again, not in and of itself anything evil. God never says, thou shalt not have one currency. It does kind of harken back to the Tower of Babel, though, when men were all of one speech, and they were able to do things together, and God divided them. When the whole world comes together, it does make me feel like we're coming into a time where it's the end. When we all start being able to communicate with each other, when we all start sharing in the same currency, yeah, there's something about that, yes. But it is not to say that that in and of itself is anything evil. Meaning, you know, if you and I speak the same language, is that evil? If you and I all have the same currency, is that evil? God scrambled their languages because he did not want them to be able to do the things they wanted to do. But man is sort of clawing his way back to that unity. But it's not so much a conspiracy as a phenomenon of intelligence. Intelligence is bringing us back together. But it's no sign of the imminent end of the world. The idea of a single currency, I don't think it's very practical at the current time. And I don't think it's something that's in and of itself any sort of sign. It's not prophesied in Revelation 13. There is no prophecy of this single currency. It's not required. They're going to all worship the devil. We know that. They're going to worship the dragon. They're going to receive the mark of the beast. But the mark of the beast does not require any technology at all. It could simply be a mark or tattoo. I'm not saying it is a tattoo, but it could simply be that. It could be more subtle. It could be something subtle and spiritual. You will be marked, in a sense, and be marked out from those who do not receive the mark. So that's one of those conspiracy theories. The bankers are trying to bring about one world currency. They want to put all our finances onto a microchip, like they're coming out with the chipped credit cards now. Is that of the devil? Is that the mark of the beast? Is that the precursor to the mark of the beast? I don't think the mark of the beast really has a precursor or requires one. You do not need any special technology for the mark of the beast. Would I take a microchip in me? I certainly would never take a microchip in my right hand or in my forehead. All right? If they wanted to put it in my... Like, if I was a soldier, I would take a microchip in my buttock. Or if my children were soldiers, I'd want them to have a microchip in their buttock. I would. I wouldn't want them to put it in their right hand or in their forehead. But what can be done with those tracking devices and stuff? Would I want it? Absolutely. It could save. That's technology that can save lives. And through superstition, people wouldn't want to use it. I think that's a little irrational. No one in the American military, if you said, for religious reasons, I don't want this in my right hand or in my forehead, and preferably not in either hand or in my head. They're like, well, we're just going to put it in your buttock. Well, the mark of the beast is not on your buttocks, okay? Or in your leg, your thigh, or whatever. You know, they should probably not put them in exactly wherever people will be able to find them, I guess. But anyways, I would not object to that if they were in that kind of a danger. You know, I thought about that when my kids are growing up. Part of me thinks, like, you know, they have these chips that can track your kids. If they ever got kidnapped, God forbid, you'd be able to find them quickly. You know, that is something that is very attractive to parents. You know, I didn't really look into it seriously because I think, well, I trust the Lord. I will pray and I will be intelligent. You know, I keep close watch on my kids. I homeschool them. There's very little opportunity for them to be taken from me like that. So it's not something that's a big concern of mine. But what if a parent was concerned about it? Would it be wrong of them to do that? Is there something inherently evil? Well, I don't like the idea of the government just having the ability to track someone. But as far as one of my children, here's the thing. Like a lot of things, our freedoms are very important in America, right? We value them very highly. We all, not all, but I mean, I certainly do. I love to own guns. I don't like the idea of the government tracking me, not because I want to do evil, and not because I want evildoers to get away with doing evil, but because the government could conceivably turn evil, right? And it could begin tracking us. And that's kind of gets back to the conspiracy theories. People get worried about conspiracies. What kind of conspiracies are we talking about? Well, we're talking about conspiracies of people who want to take over the world. They want to bring about the New World Order. Everyone remembers George H.W. Bush, back in the 90s, saying during Operation Desert Storm, or SHIELD, whichever, the first Iraq war, where there's a New World Order. And it's just a very descriptive term of saying there was an old world order. And that was the world order when the Russians were the communists, and it was the Soviet Union, and there was the Eastern Bloc, and then there was the West, the free world, and the Iron Curtain. That's the world I grew up in. And then that kind of came apart, and then there was this Iraq war in which all these countries in the world, even other Arab countries, were coming together to fight against Saddam Hussein in solidarity. And it was a very heady time. The war was won very quickly and decisively. And it was done with the cooperation of, all these different nations. So at the time, it seemed like, wow, this is a new world order where nations are coming together to stop aggression, where, Iraq invaded Kuwait. And Kuwait's this like tiny little oil-rich country that, I think historically was actually part of that. It all goes back to the breakup of the Turkish Empire, or the Ottoman Empire, I should say. So that gets into history. But anyways, that was where he said New World Order, and people were like, wow, Because the idea had already been around that these elites, and the Bushes are among them, members of these, the Bilderberg Group, or I don't know if he's actually part of that group, the Bilderberg Group, Council on Foreign Relations, all these, what were some of the other ones? It's escaping my mind. They get together and they want to talk about the future of the world. And they want to guide the future of the world according to what they want the world to be like. And what happens is, people just get scared by this stuff. They read about, they want to do this, they want to do that. And it starts making people say like, hey, you're not asking us. This is undemocratic. These people are just deciding what they're going to, they have all the power, and they're just deciding what the world's going to be like in the future. They're deciding we don't matter. And that's no good. And, and I have a man's heart. And from my youth, when I read about these things, I didn't like it either. I didn't like the sound of what they were trying to do, what I heard they were trying to do. Now, is this all real? Well, these organizations are real. They exist. They met secretly and quietly for years. One of the guys who went around popularizing this stuff was Alex Jones. But I mean, I didn't hear about it from Alex Jones. I remember when that guy was new. Actually, he probably got into it, in the 80s, back when I was getting interested in it. I was a teenager. He was probably a bit older. And so what about it? The reason I don't talk about it is because guys like Alex Jones already exist. You go on YouTube and you will find hundreds and hundreds of people talking about the New World Order talking about prophetic speculation, about what kind, you know, Russians are about to start World War III, or we're about to start World War III with the Russians. That's a prediction for 2016. Let's see how that turns out. Because I'll tell you what, I don't have any predictions. You know, I can't say, like, will we go to war with Russia? Yes or no, Paul? I don't know. I have no prophetic word on that. I hope not. I don't know. I can tell you that there is no sign of the end times having begun. The signs of the end times, when they come, they will come. You know, I talk about it in my study on Revelation. Look for the events described in the trumpets. If you haven't seen the trumpets, then you don't need to get ready for battle. Alex Jones and guys like him have been talking about this for decades, and they get to be, in my mind, a bit like Chicken Little. The sky is falling, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. And the sky doesn't fall, and it gets a bit old. It's like the little boy who cried wolf. They're constantly sounding the alarm. And when I talked about, I had that study on prophetic trends, it's the same thing with this New World Order stuff. They are constantly sounding the alarm on it. And not just sounding the alarm, they kind of are always going for the top shelf in their language. When I've looked around on YouTube recently, they would say everything is being like so-and-so destroys so-and-so. Mr. Smith destroys Mr. Jones in this debate. He destroys him. And then I listen to that and I'm like, boy, he didn't destroy him. I mean, he might have eked out a victory. But this destroy, you know, when someone actually destroys someone, what are you going to say? He annihilates him. He double dog destroys him. You're going to run out of words. Well, Alex Jones is like that. One of the reasons I don't like Alex Jones and the work he does is because he kind of became influential with some members of my family at some point a few years ago. And so I started watching him because I didn't like it. Just I looked at it, I instantly was like, I'm turned off. And so he was saying stuff, and I'm like, this stuff can't be true. It just can't be true. He was saying, you know, the police are now not allowing Girl Scouts to sell Girl Scout cookies. They're arresting the Girl Scouts, and they're not allowing them. This is the beginning of the police state. You know, he was making a huge deal. I forgot the exact language, but anyone familiar with him may remember when he did this. He started talking about the police preventing Girl Scouts, and this was a big problem. You know, he presented it in terminology that made it sound as if there was widespread, like Girl Scouts all over the country were being shut down selling their cookies. The cops were slapping them in cuffs and taking them away because the police state is here. And so I was like, "Real wow." I'm like, this is not the kind of story that only Alex Jones would cover. I think local news would be interested in this. Anyone would be interested. This would be a story anywhere. Why is it only Alex Jones? So I looked up the story. And it turned out that there was one case in which a single officer told a Girl Scout she couldn't sell cookies in some place. And then when the city council and the mayor or whoever found out, they apologized and said, you can sell Girl Scout cookies. So the officer was acting of his own accord. He was just one of those jerk police officers, one of those guys who's just too high on his authority, you know, and he's just too officious and just kind of being an all-around, you know, stick in the mud, trying to make some little girl cry. You know?
You can't do that here.
You know, so that was not policy. That was not coming down from above. That was not from the Bilderberger's lips to your ears. That was just some guy going a little bit off the plantation. And so I was like, well, look it.
Listen to what Jones is saying, and here's what's actually going on. When someone is willing to exaggerate like that, when someone is willing to exaggerate the truth to create in you a sense of alarm, I do not trust people like that. I do not trust them. Someone willing to manipulate you like that is not a trustworthy source of information. I try to be very careful about the things I say and the information I provide. I know I make mistakes, but I certainly never intentionally exaggerate a story or something like that in order to create some sort of sense of excitement or hysteria. And that's what I observed Jones doing. And that makes me dislike him. Even if I politically dislike the idea of my country losing its sovereignty to a world government power, even if I dislike the idea of our dollar being replaced with some world currency with some bureaucrat's face on it, I am not interested in that at all. But the question is that really the direction the world is going? I know some elites would like to make it go that way. But look in Britain in the year 2016. Now, hopefully they're able to carry out their will, but the people voted to exit the European Union. Now, back in the 80s, for Jack Van Impe, the European Union was the beast. And that was going to become the end times one world government. But honestly, you look at the European Union today, it's failing. Is it going to completely fail? I don't know. Because I don't really know. I think a lot of times people get caught up in Daniel and they look at the details of Revelation, like in the chapter 13 of the beast. And I, you know, what I see there is that the beast requires the dragon. It's going to be a religious sort of thing. They're going to worship the dragon. The end times is going to be such a clear event. The things that are going on now are unclear. They seem more like business as usual. We do live in extraordinary times. Our own times are extraordinary for ourselves. But, you know, generations before us felt the same way about their times. And no doubt future generations will feel the same way about their times. The times are extraordinary, but that does not mean that they are the end times, the final events of history. I certainly see no signs of that. Those events are going to be imposed on the world, I believe, from the outside, by a series of cataclysmic events described in the book of Revelation, whereby we're going to have a third part of men slain in the process. You know, there's going to be a quarter of the people dying, all this plant and animal life dying, and I believe that's going to happen in a relatively short period of time, so that it will be unmistakable. See, we have all these scriptures, like in Luke, where it talks about the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things coming on the earth. I know people are worried today about what's going on in the earth, but the panic level is not the level it needs to be. You look at Revelation chapter 6, you know, when the seals are being opened, it's definitely apparent that the whole world is kind of aware that something is going on. When the end times begin, the whole world is going to kind of know they're in the end times. It's not going to be just a few people who kind of understand the secret, like, these are the end times. Nobody knows it but us. That's not how it's going to be. The whole world's going to know they're in a truly age-changing moment. Because the Antichrist that is going to come during that time is going to be worshipped by the world as God. We have no figure in the world currently who is worshipped as God. And that is one sign that is just not fulfilled. That is the kind of one-world government we're going to have. We're going to have a one world that is headed up by a single dictator that has supernatural powers. So it's going to be very special. It's not going to be this mundacity. It's not going to be just business as usual, a few normal wars. No, it's going to be a special time. It's going to be a cataclysmic time. It's going to be unmistakably the end of the world. People will know they're in the apocalypse. They're not going to really know what to do about it. See, these cataclysmic events are going to come upon the world. And then this Antichrist figure is going to come. And he's not going to seem like Antichrist. He's going to be so persuasive. The people are going to want to believe in him. Because of the horrible times that are upon them. It says, if God had not shortened the days, even the elect would be deceived. Even those who know he isn't true. You know, as he continues to perform miracles and everyone's going after him, the pressure is going to be enormous. The pressure to conform. The wisdom which he will bring out against you to try to get you to get on board is going to be more than you have ever imagined. You've never felt pressure like that. Peer pressure, social pressure, that kind of thing. But also this intellectual and also sort of an irrational pressure to just get on board with this powerful, scary being. Because he will cause those who do not worship him to be killed. And so there's going to be a lot of pressure to conform to that. And we're going to be well aware of what we're into. It's not going to come in like this secretive thing. People say, well, it says the day of the Lord will come on them as a thief in the night. Yeah, well, because when the day of the Lord finally comes, it will be after the Antichrist has killed all his enemies. And now the world thinks we've all united under God. And everything's going to be wonderful. All our problems are solved. The cataclysmic events are behind us now. And then the Lord will return. And they will be absolutely shocked. They will be astonished. It will be the most unexpected thing. And the most horrifying thing. So I'm looking for those events. Those are my end times. Right now we're in business as usual. And as far as conspiracy theories, because that's what this talk is about, it's just a rambling kind of talk. You know, I have some scriptures I've thought about. We'll probably discuss those a little bit. Theoretically speaking, okay, there's these councils and they want to do stuff. You know, people say, Paul, we got to educate people. People got to know about this. And what? You know, when the Brexit vote came for Britain to exit the European Union, it won like 52% to 48%. That means a lot of people wanted to be part of that. It was their will. Like, do you realize that there are a lot of people that if you told them there was a group of people who was trying to bring about a unified one world government, that they would be for that. People are becoming for that. And why? Well, it kind of has to do with the dark secrets of the New Age. I mean, my point is, at this point, it's a bit late to start worrying about this stuff. This millennial generation that they talk about, they've already been poisoned. You know, their minds are already filled with corruption. We got this transgender garbage. We got the homosexual thing. You know, I have the discussion on sin by inheritance, and I had another one on homosexuality I haven't released yet. But, you know, it's not the sin of sins, but it's definitely the fact that it's mainstream and acceptable. You know, most sins people live with, like lying, but they're not considered like cool. So, you know, you lied to me. It's not cool. You know, you pursue an unnatural sexual union. That's unnatural. But they're pressing it. That's not the prime thing, though. Also, through the use of television and science fiction and stuff, they press the idea of type 1 civilization, where the world becomes unified, and that is sort of our destiny. We have to have a government, because that's what advanced alien civilizations are like. They have a one-world government. And why that would be, I don't know. Maybe alien civilizations who are truly advanced have no government, because every individual is so advanced and so moral and so self-governing that he doesn't need a government. You know what I'm saying? In a truly idealistic society, you don't use a government at all, because the purpose of government is to enforce laws against people who are breaking laws and violating the rights of other people. And that's the primary purpose. If men were all good, we wouldn't need any government, because we would be good. We would work hard, and we would help people who couldn't. You know, lazy people wouldn't exist. They would work hard, because that would be their good thing that they do. And crippled people, or, you know, whatever, crippled people, that's fine. Crippled people, people who have missing legs or whatever, or conditions of blindness and stuff, they would be able to do what they can do, but the good people who were in the world would also help them. And of course, in an ideal civilization, we'd also be able to cure those things and make limbs for people, etc., etc. Why we have to have a central authority in charge of us? Does that truly make us advanced? To me, having the sort of dictatorship of the elite is not the mark of an advanced civilization. It's barbarism. It is men lording it over men. That is the history of the world. That is barbarism, in my mind. Because true men who are truly advanced and truly enlightened need no governing. You know, when you're driving on your highway at the reasonable rate of speed, when you're doing all the right things that aren't hurting other people, you really don't need a government. You know, you might have some sort of collective, like we might have a collective here to do the roads and to take care of our local infrastructure. Well, what I'm saying is the utopian vision that they've been sold is one where this council of elites, these really smart people, make all the decisions for everybody else. And of course, in the practical world, that's not really going to work. But the current generation is becoming more and more in favor of these things. And you could tell them about it all day. It's sort of coming to the point where it's no longer a secret. When people start talking about not wanting to be part of a one-world system, I think it's getting to the point where people would be like, well, why wouldn't you? Like, that's crazy. You want to be an isolated nation? The whole world is joining together and you don't want to be part of it? See, they're trying to present this almost as an accomplished fact. Like, the whole world is coming together, whether you like it or not, whether you vote on it or not. And anyone who opposes it is nuts. They used to say, you're nuts if you believe this is happening. Now they say, you're nuts if you oppose it. And that gets me to think, practically speaking, what are you going to do about it? Like I said, they've got Alex Jones. They've got all the other hundreds of people talking about the New World Order. The information is all out there. It's being spread. Why don't I talk about it? Because I am a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I represent a global elite. I represent a global elite which intends to take over the world and establish a dictatorship under Jesus Christ. We are going to rule the world. We are going to overthrow all the governments of the world. The democratically elected governments, the dictatorships, whatever. We're going to overthrow all of them and wrap them up into our kingdom. That's what we're doing. So my attitude towards the New World Order and the global elite and what they're trying to do is, as an analogy I use, let me give you the analogy. I have kids, they wrestle. I coach wrestling. And we have races sometimes where the kids will race each other, like relay races. And it never fails that there are kids who just, when they're running, they look over their shoulder, they got to see where the other guy is. And as they do that, I can visibly see it slowing them down. And we yell at them, stop looking at the other guy. Look ahead. You got to look ahead and run straight ahead. Looking back slows you down. And to me, it's the same thing. I'm looking at the goal. I've got my eyes on Jesus. We need to all have our eyes on Jesus if we want to be his servants. Spending a lot of time worrying about the other people who are trying to establish, you know, they're trying to win the race, trying to establish their world government. I already know how it's going to end. So their establishment is not going to beat mine. I know we're going to win. And I'm going to run the race as if I fully intend to win. Meaning, I'm not going to look back at them to see, are they gaining on me? I only need to look ahead because that's where I'm headed. You know, as Jesus said in Matthew 6:25, he said, well, in verse 24, he says, you cannot serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. A lot of the things people are afraid of with the New World Order is, what are they going to do to my nation? What are they going to do to our country? What are they going to do to our money? What are they going to do with our prosperity? Are they going to put us all on this global plantation and enslave us all? Yeah, as a man, I don't want to let that happen. And, you know, if it's not the end times, I'll vote against it. But my primary mission in life is not to fight that. If I'm going to fight that, it's going to be because I've been drawn into the conflict, you know, without, you know, meaning like drafted or just drawn in. The war comes to me. I'm not going to be looking to get in the front line of stopping them. I'm not worried about stopping them. I'm worried about finishing my work. I'm going to finish my work. I can't serve the interests of God and then serve the interests of the world. You know, mammon means money or riches. But to me, it kind of implies, you know, like in Revelation 18, when it says the merchandise of that great whore, you know, the merchandise of gold and of silver and of precious stones and of pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood and all manner of vessels of ivory and all manner of vessels of most precious wood and brass and iron and marble and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and, well, whatever. It's all from the top of my head. Sometimes I get lost in that little list, but in slaves and souls of men, yes, cattle, of beasts and of sheep, and of horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. There is so much merchandise in the world. There's so much riches in the world. And ultimately, I want my children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren to be free like I was. And I certainly don't want to be neglectful of that, but there's something far more important going on. You know, I think religiously, the crisis is much more acute. know, people are just so ignorant. They don't really understand what they believe. They're not really prepared for the end times. You know, I don't think we're in the end times. But if the end times were to come upon us, you know, most Christians are just not ready for it. And one of the things in my ministry that I want to do is actually prepare people for that. And actually teach them the things that will carry them. A lot of times, you know, people think that, oh, well, we can talk about the Bilderbergers and that's preparing for the end times. No, it is not. You know, having information and facts about things that are going on in the world is not preparation for the end times. You are giving your mind over to thinking about and fretting about and concerning yourself with things that are not threats to you. Especially if we're going into the end times. If we're going into the end times, we need to be focused on the victory, not on what the enemy's doing. If we're living in ordinary times, we need to be responsible with the things God has given us and vote in a way that will make the world a hospitable place for the gospel to be preached in. And we can live our lives peaceably. You know, we want to seek these things. So as living in a democracy where we are the rulers, we have to be good stewards of what we've been given. So yeah, should we oppose certain things? Yes. Should we, you know, should that be the focus of our ministry? Absolutely not. And so, you know, I don't mind listening to a little of it. I honestly can't. You notice my details on the New World Order are so vague because I really don't bother. I'm just not interested. At one time I was. Yeah, I mean, I used to read that Spotlight every week. I would look forward to it coming in the mail. What are those people up to? You know, I remember my dad didn't like Spotlight because it was kind of anti-Semitic. But he still liked it for a lot of the anti-New World Order stuff. It presented, quote-unquote, news that we weren't getting elsewhere. So it was kind of interesting. Same thing with a lot of the alternative news sources at that time and the books. I mean, I had more than just Dark Secrets of the New Age. That's just the one that comes off the top of my head. But there are so many more. But really, what do we need? You know, Jesus said in Matthew, continuing, verse 6:25, you know, take no thought for your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor yet for your body, what you shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? And he goes through the birds and how you're better than them. And he talks about the lilies of the field. But his point is, you know, God is going to take care of you. And therefore, he says, what's the conclusion in verse 33? But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. The earthly things that most people fret about are not things we have to fret about. We don't need to worry about the mammon. Go and do your duty. Be a good steward of what's been given you. But, you know, my hobby is not the New World Order. That's not what I'm going to get into on the side. Not that it's like deadly poison or anything. I mean, is there a place for it? Sure. But I mean, if I'm a really zealous Christian, I mean, I'm not in the business of telling Alex Jones what to do. But from my perspective as a very zealous Christian, the New World Order is not a priority. That's what I'm talking about. It's just not a priority for me. I don't want them to take control of things. I don't like the idea of some global elite board of directors sitting up there. These high and mighty rich people declaring what people can and can't do. But I mean, you got to be realistic about their ambition. Just because it's their ambition, it's going to be very difficult for them to actually enforce any such rule. they're going to have a lot of resistance from a lot of people. Yes, people are becoming more accepting of this, but that can change. You know, if they were to start becoming oppressive, you might see a little different attitude towards it. Like I said, the British got a little taste of the New World Order over there in the European Union, and they decided they didn't want to be part of it. Some of the other nations there are reconsidering their membership. And I tell you, if Europe can't stay united, you're not going to have the world stay united. Not without a really powerful strongman, the Antichrist. Without the Antichrist, you're not going to have a one-world government. It won't work. It won't happen. The world is still way too divided. They can dream. And I really believe that these Bilderbergers and CFRs, they're dreaming. And I don't think they're half as competent as people give them credit. And there's this big sinister plot to take over the world. And yet, you know, tubby little Alex Jones is taking them down. Because he takes credit for, we're stopping them. We're stopping them. We're completely making a difference. We're doing it, people, you know. He takes credit for, you know, having an effect against it. And you know what? God bless him. I got no problem with him. That's his thing. I don't think what he's doing is bad. It's just not for me. Not for me. I have a more important mission. My mission is not to expose them and stop them. My mission is to get the victory, to prepare the way for Christ. You know, we want to prepare the way for Christ. So when he comes, he'll find the fire kindled. This New World Order, that's smoke and mirrors as far as I'm concerned. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 9. Associate yourselves, O ye people, and ye shall be broken in pieces. And give ear, all ye of far countries. Gird yourselves, and ye shall be broken in pieces. Gird yourselves, and ye shall be broken in pieces. Take counsel together, and it shall come to naught. Speak the word, and it shall not stand, for God is with us. For the Lord spake thus to me with a strong hand, and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people, saying, Say ye not a confederacy to all them to whom this people shall say, A confederacy, neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. I want to read that verse again. Confederacy, I believe, should read conspiracy. Say ye not a conspiracy to all them to whom this people shall say, A conspiracy! Neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. Sanctify the Lord of hosts himself, and let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. And he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of stumbling, and for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, for a gin, and for a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Obviously, in Isaiah's historical context, that had a meaning, and you can look that up in my study in Isaiah chapter 8. But for us in this context, this is my feeling on conspiracy theories. I'm not going to tell you, oh, a conspiracy. A conspiracy. Oh, they're conspiring. They're conspiring. I'm so afraid. The people are associating themselves, the Bilderbergers, the CFR. And I can't remember, those are the only two that I can come up with for some reason. I know there's more, but my brain has dismissed that information as unimportant. I was featuring my mind, when I think things are dealt with and unimportant, my brain kind of ejects them into the, like, unimportant file. And it's very hard to dig stuff up out of there. I'm not going to say to you a conspiracy, come to you going, oh, there's a conspiracy. Don't say that. Neither be afraid. That's what their fear is, this conspiracy. What are they going to do to us? They want to enslave us. They want to take away our guns. They want to take away our freedoms. They want to take away this and that and make us slaves in their global plantation. I'm not afraid of them. They aren't scary. Their conspiracy is not scary. You know, a bunch of pinheads and brainiacs from elite universities getting together and deciding how the world is going to be run in the future doesn't scare me. The Lord scares me. I mean, I trust him. He's my savior. But if I put, you know, the British royal family on one side and then the living God on the other and say, which one is scarier? And I want you to think of scary or fearful, and this is my favorite way to describe it, as like a live electrical wire, if you've ever seen one. Bzz, bzz, where it's, you can see the power. If you've ever been close to a large fire, or to the edge of a cliff, and you see, you look over the edge of the cliff, and you see how far you could fall, and you know that the potential, you know, that the energy of your body falling off will destroy you. There's a lot of potential energy there. A body that has been elevated has a lot of potential energy, and there's something fearful in that. It can be destroyed. Same thing with God. God is such a power. And Jesus said, fear not them that can kill the body, but afterwards they can do no more. But fear rather him which can destroy both body and soul. The Lord is the one who can destroy both body and soul. And he is powerful indeed. The Bilderbergers aren't powerful. They derive that, you know, the devil gives the kingdoms of the world to whoever he wills. And if the devil has that power, it was given him from God. And God knows what the devil's going to do with it. And he is not worried because it is all according to his design. So why should I worry about it? Why should I worry about what the devil's doing with his power? I got to worry about what I do with the power God has given me. God has given me power in his Holy Spirit to preach the gospel, to turn men to the kingdom of God and to the righteousness of God, that you could take hold of a holy power which allows you to change your life through the power of God, through the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. That is real power. That is the kind of power I want to be fixated on. I don't want to be fixated on the power of some global elite far off dreaming about ruling the world. Let them dream. We will see what will come. But I know that they are not to be feared. They are not to be dreaded. The Lord of hosts is the one to be feared. And he is a sanctuary to us, but also a stone of stumbling for people, a rock of offense. That's spoken of Jesus. For both the houses of Israel, they stumbled at him. So, but in principle, this prophecy is important because it is very clearly saying that what men, they associate themselves, they want to do things, they take counsels, it's not going to come to anything. Oh, it may come to something. You know, there are conspiracies and men's lives perish. Men die. But God's plans march forward. They do not. They are not going to interfere with what God has ordained. So God is the one we must fear. You know, we know what's right. If we are seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness, we have such power. You know, if we were more effective at preaching the gospel to people, here's the thing. If the world is going to go after sin and iniquity and reject the gospel, is what, plan B? Well, the New World Order's coming. We got to stop it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, I want to preach the good news. The sacrifice of Christ. But if you don't want to hear that, I can preach the bad news, which is the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, the New Age. They're coming. They want to take your children. They want to corrupt them. I mean, it's true. They want to corrupt your children, the new age. I mean, just, it's all over television. I don't fear it. Because I believe in my own gospel. I believe in my own beliefs. Yeah, I believe in my parenting. I think something that I've learned is with child rearing in this world. I don't like fear or try to shield them from everything in the world. Sure, I shield them from the worst things. But I allow them to see things that kids in the world are seeing. Because I believe in the way I'm raising them. And I know it works because I hear them say things. They comment about things in the world. They say, you know, well, that's immoral. And they say, well, that's wrong. And they know that it's out there. Because the last thing I want is to raise children in this little bubble. And then they go out and they're suddenly overwhelmed by what the world is actually like, having never been exposed to it. You've got to inoculate your kids a little bit, you know. You can't just shield them. I guess, what has this got to do with it? Well, I guess it just sort of makes me think in terms of the New Age. The way that that is used is through kids. They put it in television shows and they try to put this sort of, the idealism of that set of ideas, of that philosophy, they put that idealism into movies, kids' shows. They put that idealism in there, and it becomes the idealism of these empty vessels in the world. Because parents, many parents don't teach their children really to believe in anything. They just go off to school, I'm going to work, and they have these empty lives. And where does their, you know, and they don't have faith, they don't have religion. So where does their philosophy of life, their goals, their, you know, general philosophical orientation, where does it come from? It comes from Hollywood. It comes from the ideas that are being put out in cartoons and television. And so, yeah, we're getting generation after generation exposed to unchristian beliefs and ideals, which align with, yes, this sort of burgeoning one-worldism. Yeah, they're being fed all that. But the solution is not to just teach them all about it. You know, when I hear things, I make comments, but I don't sit down with a textbook of New Age stuff and start telling my kids all about it so they can know what's wrong. To me, you don't start off with the enemy. You start off with the truth. You know, you fill them with the truth, and you yourself believe in it. Not just children, but other people. You know, if people won't hear the gospel, they're going to be filled with something else. They might oppose the New World Order, but they don't need me to preach that to them. There are plenty of other voices out there that are working against the New World Order and one worldism, globalism and all that, and the global elite. There are plenty of voices and people who still believe in individual freedom and democracy and our republic who are fighting for that. So if people won't hear the gospel, then they can hear those guys. You know, but they're not going to hear from me something other than the gospel. Because the gospel is what's going to truly save us, and it's what's going to cause us to enter into that kingdom. It's going to cause us to inherit that body that will never perish. It will cause us to be able to draw near to the living God. These are the things that I covet. You know, my home, my land, my country, they are temporary. As a man, I have a man's heart. I have a natural affection for all those things. But I know that my first affections and the only master I can serve is the Lord. I can't serve two different ideologies. I can serve the ideology that
brings the Lord Jesus and his kingdom in. Or I can, you know, worry about opposing the ungodly forces of the world and fighting against flesh and blood, essentially. You know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world. Not the flesh and blood rulers, but the spiritual. Yeah, I'm fighting a battle of ideas. But I want my ideas to win. I'm not just here to stop bad ideas. I'm offering good ideas. And I'm not here to sound alarms. Like I said, it's the bad news. We're not here to sound alarms about the bad news is, yep, they're taking over. They want your kids. No, we're going to preach the gospel, and that is the... No, I'm going to preach the gospel, and not just preach the gospel, but also teach Christianity so that people can obtain the promises of Christianity so that they can grow up into Christ, into the image of God. And that is very powerful. And I discussed that. And I have plenty of teachings on that. There's one on promises and many other subjects. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about this because I always get messages about, Paul, you got to talk about the New World Order or the New Age or globalism or the global elite or the conspiracy theories. You know, they knocked down the World Trade Center. It was a bomb or whatever. Yeah, I looked at the engineering articles, and I don't think it was, but does it really matter? You know, I don't trust those people to begin with. It doesn't matter. Even if they didn't plant the bomb, they didn't stop the bombers either. I mean, they were so incompetent. If they weren't responsible, they were irresponsible. And so I don't have a lot of faith in government. I don't have a lot of faith in men. Why should I? I put my faith in God. So I expect men to betray me. I expect the government to betray me. I don't like that. I'm going to vote against it because I still live in a democracy. But that's how it goes. So we can only fight one battle at a time. I mean, that's my point. You can't put all your energy into serving Christ and also put all your energy into worrying about what the global elite are up to. Look, you've heard about it. You can learn about it. Sure, learn about it. There's plenty of sources on that. But don't waste too much time with it. Learn the basics. Learn, you know, we need to be free to preach the gospel. We can't have some global elite telling us we can't teach Christianity. But if they do, well, that'll be an opportunity for us to die for the Lord, won't it? You know, that'll be for an opportunity for us to go to be imprisoned. You know, I heard, I don't know if this is absolutely true or not, like up in Canada, that it's illegal to say that homosexuality is a sin, or to say that someone's going to go to hell for being a homosexual. And if you've studied with me for long, you know I don't really talk about people going to hell. But to say those things is now illegal. Now, I don't think it should be illegal for people to say you're going to hell, even though that is not the way I choose to talk to people. I believe in the second death. Even so, okay. Now, I don't want to vote to say it should be illegal, because that's against... I don't vote against myself. I wouldn't say, oh, now you can't... Then I'd be working against God and against me and against other people who want to preach the truth. All right, but if it happens, that's just another opportunity to serve the Lord. Now I can suffer for it. Whereas before I could preach the word of God and there was no cost. See, no matter what happens, I'm more than a conqueror. No matter what happens, God is with me. Each thing the enemy tries to do against us is just an opportunity for greater glory. You know, all the Bilderbergers are taking over. They've made Christianity illegal. Well, now
I can suffer for righteousness. Now the faith which I had that used to cost me nothing, now costs me something. And boy, you wonder, will that separate the nominal Christians from the true Christians? It's now illegal to worship Christ. And I don't think they're actually proposing that. But let's say it's illegal now, you can't be a Christian. I wouldn't vote for that. But if it happened, it can't hurt me with that. That's all that means is now I'm going to, that's going to, my stock as a saint is going up in that case. You know, that's greater glory. Now I'm going to suffer for doing right. Prior to that, I was doing right, but, you know, it's easy to do right when it's legal. When they make you a lawbreaker for doing what's right, no, it's hard to do right. If you're a Christian, we chop your fingers off. Or we kill you. Now, they do that in places in the world. We kill you for being a Christian. And that's terrible, and we shouldn't allow that, right? But for them, that horrible suffering in the resurrection is a greater glory. They've suffered for the Lord's sake. And they will have great glory. I believe that. Because I believe in the resurrection. Because that's the point of Christianity. The resurrection of the dead. I hope this talk kind of helps people understand why I'm not too concerned about the New World Order. I'm not too concerned about who blew up the World Trade Center. I'm really not too concerned.